So this is the fourth night of the four-night series. And in the first, so what basically the theme of what we have been doing is stillness and motion. And again, we have been looking at it with this slant of, so this is a familiar theme in Dzogchen and in the teachings of Dujom Lingpa and in the teachings of Lama Alan Wallace. So a number of you have been hearing and practicing this theme of stillness and motion for a number of years now. And so this is also a very important theme in Mahamudra, and especially in this, well, the little bit of Mahamudra that I know is primarily now coming out of these three texts of the ninth Karmapa and ninth Karmapa Wangchuk Dorje. And so this particular text is called Pointing Out the Dharmakaya. It's the shortest of the three texts. And so that's the one that I have been using as, source of information for my own practice and for what I've been, for a few slants on this theme of stillness and motion, because this is the organizing principle, actually, in pointing out the Dharmakaya, is stillness and motion. And so the first of the four nights, we established stillness, worked on developing shamatha. And so it's the sense that you get, or that I get anyway, in these texts, and as, for instance, in the teachings of Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche a week ago, is that shamatha is not, in Mahamudra, is not really thought of so much as what happens after the ninth stage, as the mental and physical pliancy that happens after you go through this very long process of the nine stages, but that what Dzogchen Ponlam Rinpoche and the flavor of this, of Trangu Rinpoche's commentary in his text pointing out the Dharmakaya, is that Mahamudra Shamatha is really a lot more accessible, and it's accessible in every moment of awareness. So when you are resting in the present moment and you are resting in a non-conceptual present moment without conceptual elaboration, fresh, unmodified, uncontrived, so non-conceptual, that's not such a big deal. But it's putting together then, and then Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche really emphasized, as I mentioned last week, that don't think about stretching stillness into this long period of stillness, because you're going to be sabotaging yourself if you do that, because the focus should be the present, and the present is always going to express itself as a moment of experience. And so the first of the four classes was all about that. How do you experience that, you know, brief periods of non-conceptuality, and then begin to string those together through practice and more training and more familiarity. You begin to string these moments together into what become longer periods, but you're not focused on anything longer than the momentary experience itself. So as you recall then, we started out with that very foundational practice that we have mentioned occasionally in the past, but I have never taught, which is just looking at a visual object. And so in this case, a stick or a stone, a pebble, or the coarse object right in front of you, whatever is in front of your field of vision. So is called the coarse visual object. And then you can move from the coarse to a subtle object, which is one that you actually choose. So the subtle object would be a pebble in the field of this whole visual perception right now. And you can go back and forth between those. And the really valuable part about that, as I hope that you discovered when you applied that practice, is that you really get a sense of how loose and relaxed your awareness has to be if you're going to be continuously engaged moment to moment to moment with just this visual field. And how this is a non-conceptual experience. As long as you are really engaging one of the five sense fields, that is a non-conceptual experience. So it really gives you a real direct experience of what non-conceptuality feels like. And then we went right from that end, the most basic end, skipped everything in between, and maybe Rick will fill in all of the details again when he picks up again. But then we went to awareness of awareness. So awareness just simply with no object whatsoever. So and the only thing that you're aware of, essentially, is the luminosity and emptiness. So this non-dual experience of luminous emptiness or luminosity and emptiness. So that then is what in Mahamudra is stillness. So that was the goal of the first night, was just to establish that the experience of what is stillness like. But the whole point of that, for first of all, becoming familiar with the experience of stillness, is to then do Vipassana practice on the mind that is resting in stillness and on the experience of stillness itself. So that was the theme of the second class, really examining the nature of the mind in stillness. And then perhaps what you found is that when you do the essential practice of examining whether you can find an origin, does this stillness of awareness, shamatha, non-conceptual, just awareness, does that come from anywhere? Does it have, basically, what you're looking for there is substantiality. Does it have any substantial qualities or not? And I think that what I have heard from a number of people is that they really had a real profound direct experience of the insubstantiality of awareness. When you just do these practices and then inquire, can you find any substantial characteristics for this? But of course, just because it's insubstantial doesn't mean that there's nothing. So this then is that balance between, or the middle way, really, between substantiality on the one hand, or the one cliff, and so you have substantiality or eternalism, or, you know, that the mind does exist with substantial properties, or on the other hand, that emptiness means a simple absence of all qualities whatsoever. So you, when you really examine, you find this stillness of awareness, moment to moment, you find that it is, you can't point to anything substantial, but what you recognize is that there is this bedrock of knowing and which is luminosity. So this then becomes what you find, basically, is luminosity or luminous dash emptiness. Luminous emptiness. So this is in all the Dzogchen and Mahamudra texts, this is the nature of the mind in stillness, is luminous emptiness. So it is simultaneously, there is a non-dual partnership of luminosity, which means that awareness is knowing and capable of knowing and illuminating objects, making them knowable, and then it knows them, makes them knowable, and then it knows them. But also, it is empty. So there, it is simultaneously, you could say, luminous and empty. And you can have an experience of that moment in the moment. And this is the way that the moment, in a non-conceptual moment, is going to express itself. The nature of that moment is going to be this luminous emptiness, or luminous, yeah. The way that Trangu Rinpoche's translator translates that is lucid cognizance, or cognizant lucidity, or lucid emptiness. So lucidity, luminosity, clarity in Dzogchen and Mahamudra are all synonymous for the quality of awareness that is knowing, and capable of knowing. So then the third class that we did last week was all about trying to experience movement, the movement of the mind. And so we went back into the classic text of Dujom Lingpa, where he expresses these four modes of mindfulness, the first of which is single-pointed mindfulness. And that one, he says, well, this brings us right up to the present. So we will just, I'll read again exactly what Dujom Lingpa had to say about that. He said, and this is in his Sharp Vajra of Conscious Awareness Tantra. He says, according to the teachings, there are four types of mindfulness of the essential nature of the path. The first entails distinguishing between stillness and movement. So this is where this is really going to be the theme tonight, is how are stillness and movement different from each other, and how are they the same? And we're going to go into an examination of your experience of the movement of the mind and see if you can come up with some answers to that question, basic question. How is stillness and movement similar, or actually, how are they, first of all, different from each other? And then, in what way can you say that they actually are the same? So first of all, Dujom Lingpa says the way that you begin your whole shamatha path is by, first of all, stillness, he refers, means awareness. Movement, he means thought or movements of the mind. So Dzogchen Ponlam Rinpoche would say that this refers to mental activity, means conception, perception, and emotional experience. So you get the idea, basically, that, you know, that's kind of covers those three baskets cover quite a lot of probably most of our mental experience. But conception and conceptualized perception also, meaning the conceptual experience that we conflate with just a visual perception or auditory perception, and the way that mental experience or mental consciousness, the sixth consciousness, begins to conceptually elaborate it, knows it, identifies it, likes it, dislikes it, all of that, and then projects that back out onto the perception, so that the perception actually becomes conflated with the conception, and you experience that as existing out there independent of your mind. So that's one of the our most common conceptual activities of the mind, is something that we actually see as perception, but it's not. So Dujom Lingpa says, first of all, distinguish or know the difference between stillness and movement. And then he says, by the power of familiarizing yourself with their different appearances. So he's just asserting right here that stillness and movement are different. And he says, by familiarizing yourself with that difference, then there is a single-pointed mindfulness of the unification of the two. And this is really interesting. I've been, you know, thinking of this and parsing this in my own mind and hearing teachings on these few sentences for several years now. And I think I am just maybe with this excursion into Mahamudra tonight, we might really find a new way of understanding exactly what he's talking about here. What it is actually is the unification of the two. So first of all, he is saying, really focus on the difference of the appearances of stillness and movement. And so the appearances, so the appearance of stillness. So it is not as if there is stillness is somehow absent of appearance, but the appearance of stillness and the appearance of movement. First of all, know the difference between these two appearances. And then when you really immerse yourself in that for a period of long period of time maybe, then you come up with this, you have a single-pointedness. And it's interesting, again, you can just read this over and over again and find nuances in the language here, but the single-pointed mindfulness of the unification of the two. So it's the unification of the two is the object of single-pointed mindfulness, is the way that I read this. And so what is the unification of the two? Here, then he's saying, first of all, focus on the difference, and then how they are the same. How are they the same in a single unity? And then, so there's effort involved in that. It takes, then he says, then even while resting without strenuously observing them, like before. So before, in this first stage, strenuously observing stillness and movement. And then you reach this point where it becomes effortless. Then you reach what is called manifest mindfulness. And then, again, back to another of my very favorite citations, and it's, again, I think I've used this in every of these four sessions, and almost every session that I have taught in the last couple of years, you know what it is, the essential instructions of the Mahasiddha Maitreepa. So again, you can read this over and over and over again, and the more that you delve into stillness and movement and perhaps some of these Mahamudra Vipassana practices, new meanings reveal themselves in these few sentences. So he mentions that there are three forms of shamatha practice. So the first one is shamatha focused on signs. The second one is shamatha focused on conceptualization. And then the third one is shamatha in non-conceptualization. And so the second one is the one that is really deals with movement, because this is the way that he describes this. Whatever virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts arise, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. This is interesting, isn't it? Because he's describing here shamatha practice. And he's saying that what you are observing is the nature of thoughts, virtuous or non-virtuous thoughts that arise. You're not concerned with their content. You're not concerned with the appearance in the way that you would think that shamatha would be just involved with having a stable, vivid experience of appearance. You know, the appearance of the breath, tactile sensations, any perception. But here he's saying you focus on the nature. And whenever you hear that, what do you think? Is that shamatha or vipassana practice? That's vipassana, isn't it? When you're looking at the nature of an appearance. So here he's saying in your shamatha practice, focused on non-conceptualization, what you're doing is focusing on the nature of these virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts. And then, why even bother doing that? Why not just focus on the appearance? Here he tells us, by so doing, they are calmed in non-grasping. Awareness arises clear and empty. So here he's giving us awareness arises clear and empty. This means luminous, lucid, clear. So it is, again, he says, you're going to experience awareness as luminous emptiness. And it will arise as clear and empty with no object of grasping. So because you are observing the nature rather than just the appearance, the object actually is calmed in non-grasping. So it doesn't have the power to cause mental affliction or to cause you to go wandering with the appearance, because you're focused on its nature. and then with no object of grasping, and it is sustained in the nature, again, of self-liberation, in which it recognizes itself, in which it recognizes itself. And so what is he talking about? What is the it referring to? And so here it is awareness that is vivid and empty, vividly clear and empty. This is the awareness, because you are focusing on the nature of the appearance, so conceptualized thought, virtuous or non-virtuous thought, whatever thought arises, you're focused on the nature of it, and because of that, you recognize, or awareness recognizes the nature of itself. Really interesting. And I think we might find how that might work, I hope, this evening. Again, he says and continues, direct the mind to whatever thoughts arise, and without acceptance or rejection, you will recognize your own nature. Again, you know, you look at the nature of the appearance, and you recognize the nature of the apprehending awareness. So here, he's telling us that in this approach to Mahamudra, that in his approach, and so he's a Mahamudra Mahasiddha, a distinction needs to be made between the way things are, so their nature, and the way things appear. And that's what we are going to examine tonight. Because what we are, so last night or last week, we were becoming familiar with the shamatha experience of movement of the mind, and then using movement as an object, or as Dzogchen Ponlap Rinpoche called it, a focal support of shamatha. And now we are going to dive into the vipassana. Now that you are familiar with the experience of the movement of the mind, now we're going to examine the nature of that mind in movement. And so the way that we do that is the meditation practice and the mode of meditation is exactly the same that we applied to the mind in stillness. So first of all, the most important thing to try to fathom or to examine is whether this mind in movement or the mind within movement has substantial qualities or not. And so you do the same meditation that we did with the mind within stillness. So what substantial, if it has substantial qualities, it will express itself in certain ways. Anything that is substantial is going to express itself. A substantial thing is going to have characteristics. So you will be able to determine, first of all, with stillness and movement, does either of these mind, the mind in stillness or the mind in movement, does it have an origin? Does it have a location? Does it have a place where it goes? And again, these are not just questions to be answered with reason or with language, or everybody knows the right answer, right? You have been through this so many times. And that, again, all throughout the text of pointing out the Dharmakaya, Trungpa Rinpoche in his commentary is saying, don't let that sabotage your experience, because that is the biggest trap. And this is why exactly Padmasambhava said, for those people who are really, really well trained, Kempos and Geshes, who try to find the experience of meditation by way of the view, you know, so immerse yourself in the meaning of emptiness for 20 years and then try to go meditate on emptiness. He says that makes it very difficult to identify pristine awareness, because there's something you begin to substitute or believe that your knowledge, the words, your elaborate understanding actually is the experience that you're seeking. Is, you know, it just means to have a correct understanding of it. So here what we are trying to do is to have an unelaborated experience. And it is just requires looking over and over and over again with these very simple questions. Where is this coming from? Where is this stillness of awareness? Where does this come from? If it has substantial qualities, I should be able to know where it comes from. Was it something somewhere else, etc.? All of those questions. And then if it has substantial qualities, what substantial qualities does it have? Does it have, you could say, mass and location? Does it have color? Does it have shape? You know, basically, these are things that, again, you go, well, you know, any kindergartner would be able to give you the right answer to that, I think. It might be interesting to ask them and find out, you know, what kind of answer, how they do answer. But it's a simple question. And if you're satisfied with the answer, the conceptual answer that you have, you will never have the experience of Mahamudra. And so you just ask these questions over and over again, and you accumulate experience from the asking of these very simple questions, and you're direct looking without elaboration. You're looking. And when you have the experience then of the insubstantiality of mind in the resting state and the insubstantiality of mind within movement, then you're ready to go. Now you're ready, you're mounting the rocket ship. But you have this direct experience of the insubstantiality of mind, and you realize that, oh, this is different. All of my experience before, even though I knew the right answer, I was behaving and I was thinking as if the mind was substantial. How else would these mental afflictions have such power over me to affect my behavior, my attitude, my moods? If they weren't substantial, if I really recognized the insubstantiality of the mind, how would these mental afflictions have power over me, etc.? And there are all kinds of other ramifications. But you get the point. What we're really looking for here is the mind in movement? So I think let's just stipulate here that we already have examined the mind in stillness, and we have come to recognize directly that the mind in stillness, so awareness with no object, non-conceptual awareness, is insubstantial. So we know that because we've gone away to our cave and we have meditated on that for the length of time necessary to have this direct recognition of the insubstantiality of the mind within stillness. Okay, now, what about this mind in movement, though? Thoughts. All of these, the mental activity, perceptions, emotions, they seem so real. They appear to be so real. They have real efficacy. Do these have the same nature, or are they different than the mind in stillness? And so, again, the way that we're going to go about this investigation is with the basic point of advice on the mind in pointing out the Dharmakaya. And that is, the basic point of advice is, don't prolong the past and don't anticipate the future. So that's the general advice. And then as Dzogchen Ponlop Rinpoche pointed out in his teaching on pointing out the Dharmakaya, that doesn't mean the past like all of your childhood memories or all of your thoughts of Christmas being anticipating the future. What he's talking about here is the previous moment of thought and the next moment of thought. And in the gap between the previous moment and the next moment is this present moment. The present moment which exists between two things that don't exist, the past and the future. And so this is where our target is for both shamatha and now for vipassana also. Because the mind in movement, where is that going to occur? Where else? In this present moment also. So what we are going to examine then is the present moment of the mind in movement. And then during the meditation that we are going to actually begin very soon now, I am going to be your Mahamudra guide. And I am going to ask you, we'll get into this stable experience of the mind in the present moment, resting in the present moment. And then I will ask you questions about your experience. And then, the idea for you is to not allow the right answer to just shortcut the whole process. Because following the process of simply investigating, looking directly, without conceptual elaboration, is the whole key here. So I am going to just ask you questions and just use the questions then to look, observe. And of course, when I say look, I'm, hamstrung by language. It doesn't mean there's any visual experience, but it's observing directly. So you are observing directly without conceptual elaboration, and then just answer this question in your own experience as you are looking at the mind in stillness or the mind in movement. What do you experience? And then honor the truth of your own experience, because this is the truth for you right now, provisional experience, and then we'll talk about the experience after the meditation. So these questions are also in your handout, but don't read the handout while you're meditating. But you can, don't worry too much about having to memorize all of these questions as well, because you can find these in your handout and for your own practice at home. You can guide yourself. So let's go directly into meditation. Begin by settling your body, speech, and mind in the experience of the present moment. You experience the body by way of tactile sensations, which are non-conceptual. So allow this non-conceptual consciousness to simply discover tension within the body, and then allow the breath to be drawn to that tension or any constriction. And then allow the tension or constriction to mount the breath and leave the body on the exhalation. So you discover relaxation in the absence of tension. All in the present moment. And discover the present moment of silence when the chattering conceptual mind goes silent. And then discover the natural state of the mind. Luminous, empty awareness. Revealed again in the present. Without prolonging the past. Without anticipating the future, this gap, fresh, uncontrived, immediate, rest the mind within this stillness of non-conceptuality. Without movement. Don't try to stretch the present into a long period of stillness. Simply go back to this momentary stillness repeatedly. And as you rest your mind in this stillness, movement is bound to arise, a moment of movement. The Mahamudra masters say that the root of meditation is recognizing the nature of thought. Of movement. So there's no reason to get rid of this movement. Just recognize it. Recognize its nature. And then simply observe the mind in movement as a momentary experience. Observe it directly, nakedly. That means without conceptual elaboration. And first of all, simply inquire, does this mind within movement have any substantial characteristics? Is it a substantial thing that comes from somewhere? Is it a substantial thing that is present here? Where is that? Is it a substantial thing that goes somewhere else when it disappears? Or is it substantial only when it's present for you? Simply observe directly. And what do you observe? If it is present in a place, does it have substantial characteristics like color and shape? And a location? Or as you look at it, do you find an absence of all of these substantial characteristics? But this insubstantiality that you may be left with, does that mean that it is nothing at all? This awareness, fresh, unmodified, luminous, and knowing, is present as well, along with the emptiness of substantiality. Now rest your mind again in non-conceptuality. Moments of shamatha, stillness, awareness with no appearances. And as you rest in this stillness, movement is bound to arise again. When it does, observe this mind in movement. Observe its nature, the nature of thought, of perception. and then simply observe. Is the mind in movement and the mind in stillness, are they the same or are they different? How do you experience them? It seems that these are two distinctly different states. One, there is an absence of thought, stillness. There's no movement whatsoever. That can't be identical to the presence of thought. But is that just a difference in the way these two minds appear? Or is that a difference in the way that they are? When you look to see if they are different in nature, this movement of the mind and stillness of the mind, how do you answer that question? Are they the same or different? Does one have characteristics that the other doesn't? But how can you answer that if neither of them has any characteristics that you have been able to discover? This is the overarching question for our investigation. Are stillness and movement, the mind within stillness and the mind within movement, are they the same or are they different? And then within the Mahamudra text of pointing out the Dharmakaya, there are 9 questions to drill down into that. Are they the same or are they different? So the first question is, as you observe them nakedly, stillness and movement, are they simultaneously present, yet separate? Are they equally present? And do they have an equal degree of reality? But they are nonetheless separate. And if you observe that they do appear to be separate and distinct, Do they have a relationship? Such as between the earth and the classic example of a chariot, in which the chariot is supported by the earth. So is movement supported by stillness? Or is stillness the environment in which movement occurs? Or is stillness the environment like space of the mind, and movement occurs like that within it? Or is this mind of stillness and the mind of movement as you're watching it nakedly? Does stillness and movement not occur simultaneously, but do they alternate so that when stillness is present, the mind of movement is not present? And when the mind of movement is present, the mind of stillness is not present. Those are three questions for really examining whether movement and stillness are different in nature, fundamentally different in nature. And now the next set of questions examines how they might be fundamentally the same in nature. So, for instance, as you are watching stillness and movement of the mind, does one turn into the other? Or do they start out different and then they become mixed? Like pouring milk into water and they become one. Or do they alternate? Not simultaneously present. Again, when one is present, the other is not. But here now, even though they do alternate, they have the same nature. Is that the way that you perceive them? If you observe that they do appear to alternate, but that they have the same nature, like water and waves, but that this nature that they share is luminous emptiness, then here are three more questions to examine what that means. do these thoughts become this non-dual luminosity emptiness only when they are recognized. Or when a thought dissolves, does it become this nature of luminosity emptiness only when it dissolves, but that while it's present, it is substantial? Do you have to do anything to get rid of it? And is it the act of getting rid of a thought that creates the nature of luminous emptiness? Or do these thoughts vanish on their own without your having to do anything? But even though you haven't done anything to get rid of it, does it become this luminous emptiness only after it has vanished? That a substantial thought dissolves into luminous emptiness. And the state of luminous emptiness that it dissolves into gives it its nature. Is that how it is? And then give up the inquiry and the close observation and simply rest again in the present moment. Relaxed, fresh, unelaborated. Rest in the nature of that present moment of experience. One of the wonderful things about these three texts of Wangchuk Dorje is, remember, this was right at the point where the oral instructions of Kagyu lineage in Mahamudra were being written down for the first time. And so it's very interesting to me that these texts are really organized almost as teaching manuals. And so what comes after this, these nine questions, then, so first of all, there's a section on how you look at what it is that you're looking at the mind in stillness, looking at the mind in movement. There are actually five different categories. We're just doing two. Then there's looking at the mind within appearances, which is one that we have dabbled in a little bit previously, but also is very exhilarating. Trungpa Rinpoche says that these first two, stillness and movement, are the most important because all the other dominoes fall very quickly after that. But there's the body and the mind, and then stillness and movement together, etc. So there are five of these. And then after individual sets of questions for each one of these categories of investigation, then there is a section on pointing out instructions for where you discuss the experience that people had. So what is the experience that you had in response to those questions? Anybody like to volunteer? Again, the point here is accumulation of experience. And even in a week of experience, if you really, you know, dive into this, at the end of the week, your experience just becomes, of these questions, just becomes so much more rich, so that, for instance, as you're out walking, you know, you might get ambushed by, you know, call it a realization or something. But an experience of just the alternation, for instance, of these experiences of stillness and motion. And what about the nature? Are you able to really experience the insubstantiality of the mind in movement? So some that may ambush you as well, you know, when you're maybe not looking at it. So when you're looking at the nature of mind, you can have an experience of non-conceptuality, of stillness, of this luminous emptiness. But as soon as the mind is in movement, the stillness disappears, and then oftentimes, for most of us in the beginning of our investigations, the movement, the phenomena of movement, and certainly the nature of movement is obscured by the movement itself because we become entranced with it. So here's a question for you. Did you experience when a difference in your experience of the mind in movement, so let's just say thought, you know, thought, perception, conception, a thought that arose, did you notice a difference between a thought, your experience of a thought, when you were looking at its nature and when you didn't? And when you weren't looking at its nature, when it was just thought. And so what is the key to know that you are regarding or experiencing the thought, the movement, as a substantial thing? Exactly. Yeah, you get carried away. And what happens when you're carried away? There's a proliferation of thought, right? It seems that you get immersed in this chain of association, and the link in the train, or the coupling between the cars of this in this train of association, can be really tenuous, can it? You know, when you look at one thought that is connected somehow to another thought, what it is that is they have in common can often be really interesting. And sometimes it's an emotional tone. You know, the content can be entirely different, but they can be linked by some subtle emotional tone. Could be a subtle, or, you know, it could be a time a time frame. You know, it was that particular year of my life, and so different in train of association, different memories arise or something. But there is this proliferation. So Craig says that if you're regarding these thoughts as substantial, you know, without your even knowing it, these thoughts become entrancing and they take you away. You're shanghaied by them. So you could say in what we would say, the way that, you know, we would say it in the Dzogchen teachings that Lama Allen teaches, your still awareness has been set in motion by grasping to the appearance. And so what happens, so that's the experience of grasping to the substantiality of an appearance, meaning basically that you're not looking at its nature. You're just the everyday substantiality of the way that appearances arise. You just take them that way. And one thought leads to another. There's a proliferation of thought. There's rumination. And, you know, so at some point then, you just kind of reach the end or the conclusion of that, and you go, huh, well, that was interesting. Or not. Or that was routine. Boy, that sure is familiar. Or whatever. I'm so tired of that train of thought. You know, I'm ready for something new. So what happens when you are... So that's the ordinary... Well, I shouldn't say ordinary. But that is our habitual way of dealing with movement, thought, that even though we won't confess to it, we regard it as substantial. We see it as substantial. That's just the way we experience it. We don't go through a thought process about it, but we experience it that way. And it has this power, especially the substantiality of really coarse thoughts like mental afflictions. You know, they have power. They can have a controlling influence on what comes next in our behavior, etc. So what about then when you're looking at the nature of thought? In the moment, what happens to thought, movement of the mind, when you are viewing the nature of the thought? Mahasiddhamaitripa says it's calmed and non-grasping.
Deeper sense of relaxation.
Right, yeah. And so does that relaxation take you to the past or the future, for instance?
Present.
Yeah, so that relaxation when you're relaxed, staying in the present moment. And what happens to the movement of the thought then?
It's more observed.
It's, yep, you're observing, so as you're observing the nature, does the thought proliferate?
You sort of step back away from it and watch it.
And what happens to the thought as you step back and watch it in the present moment? Victoria goes, I think I know what that means. Yeah, it's self-releases, the self-liberation of a thought. How did it arise? Did you call it into existence? I mean, that's the striking thing, that as you're resting in the present moment, all of these thoughts arise. Are they arising, you know, like your dog coming to a call? You know, this thought comes because, oh, as an act of will, in a sense, or what's on the menu for the next thought? It's always a surprise, isn't it? What thought arises? And then, if you are watching the nature of that thought, does it link itself to another thought in this proliferation, in a way that this thought leads, you could say is the seed of proliferation for a chain of association. You just watch it. So this is the experience of Mahamudra meditators, and you know it doesn't take much to observe this. That the thought, which can arrive with, you know, some real gusto, just dissolves on its own. You don't do anything to it. It self-releases. It self-liberates. And then what's interesting, and this is, I think, what the texts are saying, Trungpa Rinpoche points to this, but this is definitely something that you can experience. The subsequent thought can be totally unrelated, and it feels like a totally fresh, new mental experience, a fresh, new movement. And so you have this succession, and I would say that when thoughts are proliferating, do you ever see the arising of the thought and the cessation of the thought? Certainly the cessation of the thought. Do you ever see the cessation of a thought when it's proliferating? No, because it's almost like this boundaryless, I don't know, mob of thought.
So thoughts themselves are kind of chains, though.
They can. So, but...
So when we observe a thought, or when we observe the stillness itself, are we observing it in the past? Or are we somehow time-slicing it out in our own consciousness and absorbing it while it happens?
Well, so that's a very important point, Tony, and this is something that Trungpa Rinpoche emphasizes in his commentary, that we, to be able to do this, we can't be watching a thought of the past with a mind of the present. So we have to be watching the thought or the movement of the present with awareness of the present.
So it has to be in the present.
It has to be in the present.
And you're just saying in the past, more about emotions, that there is a fixed, it almost coincides with where the physical world happens, that there's a fixed amount of time between for an emotion to arise and an emotion to pass through.
Yeah.
Is that true of thoughts as well?
I don't know about a fixed amount of time, because I think it... So in the present moment, you're basically resting in the fourth time. There's no present, there's no future or past, and the present exists again between these two things that don't exist. So what is the duration of that? But you can observe, so...
There must be some kind of time slicing going on, like a computer time slicing.
Oh, well, so... yeah, you could say that it's basically something like 20 milliseconds or something like that is a moment of ascertaining cognition. So that's, you know, in neuroscience and cognitive science, they say pretty much the same thing that Buddhist psychology says, that 64 moments of individual perception in a finger snap. So they're very, very brief. And then, so that's the moments of mind model that is common to both contemporary science and to Buddhist psychology. And then it is the number of these moments that are coherent, basically, that determine. So if you have, you know, 64 of these are all of the same theme and have the same object, then that becomes a more durable object.
So we are somehow weaving in, but when grasping occurs, the weave falls apart and we go off on a tangent.
Right. So then the question is, when you are watching the movements of the mind, are you able to see the arising, the presence, and the cessation of the thought itself as basically a discrete unit? And so if you are, according to Trungpa Rinpoche, That would indicate that you are not grasping to the thought, that you are resting in the present. So you are watching the experience of movement, which is a present mind. You are watching that with the present mind. Yeah, it has to happen in the same moment. Yeah, so if you're trying to watch the previous moment of mind with the next moment of mind, it's already out the barn door. And so Trungpa Rinpoche, for those of you who care about this sort of thing like I do, because I've had been on the losing end of debates about this, Trungpa Rinpoche points out that even though sutra scholarship, especially Shantideva, points out that the mind can't experience itself in the same moment, so that awareness is always retrospective. So that is the sutra point of view. And Trungpa Rinpoche points out the fallacy and the reason that that's limited and can't pertain to Mahamudra, and that in Mahamudra, take at face value that the mind is self-aware in individual moments of perception. And then there Chandrakirti also would say that there is self-awareness, et cetera, et cetera. But it's very important. He points out in a number of different places in the text that it is very important that you have to be watching the present moment of experience of either stillness or movement with the present moment of awareness. So they have to be contemporaneous in the same moment of perception. And so basically that's the a question then for your experience. Is there a difference between the experience of thought, of movement, when you are observing its nature and when you're not, you know, and just check that out. And then, so I just want to raise one more point here. We are running out of time again. This idea of alternation is really interesting between stillness and movement, because in the Dzogchen texts and, Lama Allen's teachings, and in my teachings, what I'm just trying to repeat faithfully what Lama Allen has said and taught us, we talk about simultaneous stillness and motion. So what does that mean? So here is the way that I have presented this in the past, and I have heard it presented in the past. The presentation of Dujom Lingpa's first two modes of mindfulness. So first of all, what you do is you recognize the difference between stillness and motion, and then you have a simultaneous experience of stillness and motion. Sound familiar? You know, so I've heard that over and over, and I've said that over and over again. So here, this idea of simultaneous, could that possibly be referring to the appearance? To the appearance of stillness and the appearance of motion, can those be appearing simultaneously? So as a relative truth, as the kunzop, or are we talking about something else? But I think that if we try to have an experience of simultaneous stillness and motion, we're going to be very frustrated by that, because what we experience is that either stillness, the mind is resting in stillness, meaning that there are no appearances, or there are appearances. So is there, and these nine questions are all about investigating the nature of and the relationship between this stillness and movement, and they are very, very profound questions for you to observe, you know, and come up with your own conclusions. But perhaps then what Dujom Lingpa actually says is that, so he doesn't mention simultaneous at all in the four modes of mindfulness. That term is not used. But what he says is that by the power of familiarizing yourself with their different appearances. So stillness and motion are going to be different appearances. There is single-pointed mindfulness of the unification of the two. So there's something, and then this is part of the difficult shamatha instruction because it is so sparse. Dujom Lingpa doesn't go into a lot of shamatha instruction. He gives you these real pith instructions. Then some places he goes a little more into detail about, you know, how to regard thoughts without grasping to them. But here especially, the it seems to me that when he's talking about the unification of the two, what could he be talking about? Couldn't you have a unified appearance of, are you trying to unify the appearance of stillness and motion? And I think that's what is going to drive a shamatha practitioner crazy, is trying to have a unified experience of the appearance of stillness and the appearance of motion. And having the appearance of stillness appear as absolute space of phenomena or something like that, the space of the mind, and that be an appearance, and that then you have a simultaneous appearance of movement arising within that. So the what he's saying is that you familiarize yourself with the difference of the appearances so that they are different appearances, and then you have a unification, you have single-pointed mindfulness. Your mindfulness becomes single-pointed of what? The unification. So what is the unification referring to? I think now with this Mahamudra support, I think he's talking about the nature. The nature of stillness and the nature of the mind and movement are the same, and you discover this. And this is what you come to realize then. And this is so coherent and consistent then with, for instance, Mahasiddha Maitripa. Whatever virtuous and non-virtuous thoughts arise, steadily and non-conceptually observe their nature. And so what is then the nature of so we started out asking the question, is stillness and movement, are they the same or are they different? Well, you have to say that they're different in appearance, right? Because when there is stillness, there is an absence of movement. And when there is movement, there is an absence of stillness. Because by definition. So you can say that, and that they seem to, well, in your recognition of them, they seem to alternate. When there is stillness, there's, you know, sometimes there's stillness, sometimes there's not. So, boy, that seems to take a load off. Make it a lot easier if you just accept that you're not trying to have a unified experience of stillness and motion in the same moment. But what you are trying to do is to recognize the nature of the appearance, and that of either stillness or movement, whichever is happening. What your Mahamudra, Shamatha, and Vipassana task, it's all basically the same. You're looking at their nature. And what is the nature that you find? You find that the nature of stillness is that there is no place where the mind is still. There is no substantial thing that you find that is resting. What you find is just a nature of luminous emptiness. What do you find with the nature of the mind in movement? You find that there's no substantial thought in movement. You don't find a substantial coming or going. What do you find when you just are observing This, you find, mind in movement is luminous emptiness. And so you find that a unification of the nature of these two that are really, so what do you find? You find the indivisibility of luminosity and emptiness. So that, and this is exactly what all of the Mahamudra and Dzogchen texts say, is that these two, luminosity, the appearing aspect and the knowing aspect and the emptiness aspect are so closely linked. They're not even two sides of the same coin. You know, they're non-dual. So that you have to say, Trungpa Rinpoche says that you have to say that appearance is just emptiness appearing, and that emptiness is the emptiness of appearance. So these, you have appearance and emptiness just in this relationship where one doesn't exist without the other, and they are both necessary, and this is what you're left with, just this non-dual experience of luminosity, the knowing awareness quality of the mind, and the insubstantiality of the mind. And that's all there is to do, is just to recognize whether this, the mind is in stillness or whether the mind is in motion. All you're doing is recognizing the nature of each of those. And it's a lot easier, frankly, to do that, I think. And that then leads to the stillness of shamatha. So in this way, then, the shamatha and vipassana are really linked as practices, in that even though in the Mahamudra also says you achieve shamatha first, but it sure seems to me like they're not talking about, you know, the mental and physical pliancy at beyond the ninth level of shamatha. You know, that is the stage development. But it is just the resting in the moment. The Mahamudra shamatha, Dzogchen Ponlamp Rinpoche says, is this moment of non-duality or of non-conceptuality. So that just all becomes a lot more doable. And then as you rest, view the nature, there is no grasping, there is no movement, and all you're left with is just resting in the nature of the mind, whether it's still or whether it's in movement. And the outcome is that you don't prefer stillness over motion. There's no reason to. Why would you? They have the same nature. So anyway, that is a lot to work on. And these questions then, I really encourage you to use these questions to just guide your own investigation of the relationship between stillness and movement. How are they different? How are they the same? Or the unification of their experiencing their nature. And
what a wonderful gift they are.
Aren't they a wonderful gift? Yeah. You know, and you just think of what an extraordinary time we live in, where we can be sitting in Annisquam, you know, and hearing these teachings, and, you know, great authentic Mahamudra masters are just beaming this in, you know, on either seeing them in person, or, you know, you either fly to them or they come to you, or, you know, they're on webcasts or whatever, you know, it's like mind-blowing. The extraordinary bounty of authentic Dharma that we have available to us now. So, again, just remember that it is not, unlike studying and reasoning and analysis, this is not just a matter of learning the right answer and getting really, really subtle with your reasoning and thinking, ah, now I have reached a level of subtlety where this has to be true. And I can be very proud of my understanding. You know, that they, you know, Mahamudra and Dzogchen both say that's, you know, probably an impediment, an obstacle. And what you're doing is looking directly and, you know, asking a few questions, looking directly, what do you see? And what is the truth of your own experience? So it is accumulated experience that is the key. You know, just keep at it. And the way that you accumulate experience is, as Khandra Rinpoche said, by wearing out cushions. And so in our busy lives, it can be difficult to wear out cushions, you know. Might have the same cushion you've had for 15 years, you know. But, you know, so that's why retreat is very important. So when we have the opportunity to do retreat, it's good to take advantage of those opportunities. But anyway, thank you all for coming. Thank you for your interest. As I said, you know, this is a great gift that you give to me, because I certainly, being a lazy sort, I would never immerse myself. I would be satisfied with reading a book, frankly, you know, just reading the book one time and figure that's done and then move on to another book. But because of the responsibility of trying to convey the information, then it really forces me to try to integrate it into my own practice. And then, you know, that, because I'm not only lazy but slow, I have to go back, you know, to the text, consult it over and over again. I outline, I have 100 pages of outline of just this short text, you know, and I move it all around, massage it, I edit it, I basically write a book out of my own version of a book out of it. You know, and I would never do that if I didn't feel a responsibility to try to give you my best. So I thank you for that, because it's so valuable for me. And then we have this wonderful dedication from His Holiness. So a way of dedicating the merit for all the goodness that you have created with your dedicated practice, your motivation. And this is composed by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, based on chapter 10 of the Bodhicharya Avatara of Master Shantideva. So let's all recite together. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rain and bountiful harvest. May all the medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world.